Good evening, this is Barbara Glickstein. You're tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. I'm here in Melbourne, Australia at the International Congress of Nursing, and I'm pleased to welcome Jesse Kennedy, who is the current president of the National Student Nurses Association in the United States. He'll be graduating from Lane Community College this June and starting in the fall at Oregon Health and Sciences to complete a baccalaureate degree in nursing. Welcome to Health Styles.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Jesse, here you are among the 4,000 plus nurses who've all come to Melbourne to address issues of health equity and access to health care. And you're a new student or graduating student in nursing and are currently taking the leadership role as a president of the National Student Nurses Association. What did you come here with as a dream while you're attending the Congress?
Well, I thought that access to care is pretty important, and that's what I've focused on at the local level at Lane Community College. Our group of 10 nursing students at the Student Nurses Association at Lane Community College went to Thailand in 2011 and again in 2012. We wanted to go to kind of get a broader perspective on healthcare systems, but one of the things that we heard from a lot of people was that we were focusing too much on the global scene, which I disagree with, but in an effort to dispel...
Why do you disagree with that?
I think, you know, being able to have that perspective and realize that we're not the only ones out there, and just because we spend the most on healthcare doesn't mean we have the best system. There's a lot of other perspectives to put into it that we could take from and take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I think we come up with a lot better system than we have now.
I like to use the term, I'm a global nurse. Do you relate to that term?
Yeah, and actually when I was running, that was basically my platform, was global view with a local focus. Because in order to dispel this perception that all we do as nurses is focus on one thing or another, we started to track our community hours. And we developed a contract for everybody that was going that they would organize and do all the logistics for at least 4 community events. So our group of 10 students who went to Thailand were able to put together vaccine clinics, diabetes education clinics. We went into Head Start of Lane County, went in, worked with the students, taught exercise programs, nutrition programs, and we were able to put in about 2,400 hours of community service from February to November.
10 of you.
10 of us. So
that's impressive.
We were able to show that, yes, we are going abroad. Yes, we raised money to do this, which is money coming from our community, but we are getting a much broader perspective of the healthcare system. While we're doing that, we are giving back to the community.
And this idea of prevention and health promotion in the role of the nurse, in addition to the clinical skills and the education and theory that you've been studying in your education in the last couple of years, how have you seen a shift with both healthcare reform and the IOM report in the way you're being educated and what you need to be a nurse in the 21st century?
So I think there's been at least a lot of lip service to the need for preventative care. Unfortunately, with our current system, there's not always the money for the preventative care. Most of the time when we see patients, it's when the condition has come to such a extreme state that they have to come in through the emergency room. So I think as nursing students, most of the education that we're getting is focused on preventative care and the need for it. The problem has been finding the money to do that, finding the way to actually get that on the ground and get it running. So as a Student Nurse Association at each local chapter, that's what I've been focusing on quite a bit, is getting the students themselves to start with preventative care. I mean, we can't necessarily go out and practice medicine or healthcare, but we can actually go and educate people all the time. I mean, we are educated on a lot of the preventative care things. We're educated on nutrition, and that's one of the things that I have found is the most lacking is nutrition itself. So we can go into the communities as students and share what we've learned with people, and you know, you don't need to have a license to do that. And you know, if you start young and you go to, you know, elementary school kids, preschool kids, and you start to show them, these are some healthy choices. Yes, it can taste good. No, it doesn't, you're not getting it from McDonald's. It doesn't come in a shiny box, but it's, you know, it tastes good. There's nutrient value in it, and you don't necessarily have to go to the grocery store. I mean, you can even find farms, you can find farmers markets. Most cities, most towns have a farmers market, and when you go to the farmers market, you're also supporting the local agriculture. It's all just a win-win, and I think that as students, we should be taking advantage of that, because not only are we helping the community, but it's augmenting our own education. And by doing that, you can also get credit. A lot of the students have been able to negotiate with their faculty that you can actually get credit for working in the community. So not only is your community benefiting, you're getting educational credit, and it looks really good when you're trying to get a job, because a lot of people don't have a job right now. A lot of graduates aren't able to get jobs right out of college, and so being able to keep your resume active, showing you're doing volunteer work, showing you're doing leadership, that sort of thing is a good way to be able to avoid having that big blank spot on your resume.
We all are aware that the recession has impacted many the employment of many new students. And this idea of forging ahead and creating models of innovation while a student in terms of public health and prevention and nutrition, do you see and have you heard in your travels as this new president of the National Student Nurses Association in the United States, entrepreneurial ideas, new models of nursing, new business models, new community-based models that nurses are starting because of this lack of, if you will, tertiary care positions, which many nurses, when they graduate, want to work in or moved in that direction, in addition to community-based nursing care?
So I've only been in office for a month now.
Oh, gee, okay. But I know you have big ideas, Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority of the people that I've spoken with want to work in the community. They want to work in public health. They want to work in community health. So I haven't seen any hard models of things that people want to do, but I have heard from quite a few people that they're wanting to open multiple disciplinary clinics that kind of implement different practices. One of the things that I would like to do, that I've talked with several of the people from Portland and Eugene, is to create a multiple disciplinary clinic that uses preventative care, that uses nutritionists, that uses exercise, that uses, chiropractors, every discipline that we can, because we can't keep looking at medicine as a single thing that's going wrong. It's the whole body. We can't keep treating symptoms. We have to find the cause. We have to look at the body as a whole system rather than the normal Western model, which is to break it down by system and break it down into the cellular level. We can't keep doing that because it clearly isn't working for our chronic illness patients. I mean, we're pretty good at fixing specific things. If you have a broken bone, if you need your appendix taken out, we're very good at that. After that, however, we're not so good. We're not very good at getting rid of hypertension, rather than looking at it from a whole body perspective of stress, nutrition, what's your lifestyle like. Instead, we are much more apt to say, here, start taking this beta blocker, start taking all these medications, and it's just not sustainable. I mean, we can't keep asking people to take all these meds and still try to reduce healthcare costs. That's not going to happen.
Speaking of changing healthcare models, we're entering the next phase in the next coming months and into 2014 of the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, and which will look at the state exchanges across the country, and hopefully its purpose being to increase access to insurance, both private insurance as well as helping those who currently may not know that they're eligible for Medicare, Medicaid, particularly Medicaid in states, through that eligibility process, be identified and helped and supported onto access to healthcare through our government programs. What role do you see nurses in helping the communities better understand the Affordable Care Act and some of the provisions that we're coming up to being rolled out that are still in many places? We know a recent study by Kaiser News, I believe it was, suggests that there is still a significant population, percentage of the population who don't know that it's actually a law. So we've had a lot of politicalization of healthcare reform without a lot of really clear understanding for a good percentage of our population to know some of the benefits of healthcare reform. What role can student nurses play in helping communities understand that?
I think a big population that you're probably referring to are people that are probably in the elder community, people that are coming into the healthcare system on a chronic care basis. And I think that's a great time when you can actually get in there and speak with people, because as student nurses, we have a lot more time in the hospital setting. We don't have five patients with a full load. We generally have three, four patients. And that gives a lot more time where you can do in-depth education about the Affordable Care Act. I think also it'd be great to start getting student nurses out into the communities, visiting community centers, visiting schools, visiting even retirement homes would be a great place to start, and really start to get the education out while at the same time really getting a deeper understanding of what the Affordable Care Act is, rather than just what you think it is. When you start answering questions, when you start thinking about it on a deeper level, not only do you understand it better, but then you can also be able to communicate that better.
The other major model of influence in the nursing community is the Institute of Medicine's report on the future of nursing and the Campaign for Action. What role do you hope to see as president of the National Student Nurses Association in leveraging the guiding objectives and principles of the IOM report for the future of nurses that are part of your community?
So our biggest focus with the IOM report is to take the resolutions that the schools pass and that the states have passed that have brought it up to the national level and have also passed, to be able to implement those resolutions along the IOM report lines, because, I mean, really, students should be the impetus for all of this change, because we are the ones who are seeing it from an entirely different perspective. We don't have the locked in, you know, we've always done it this way perspective. We have this perspective where you're trying to understand everything. And so when you're trying to understand everything, sometimes it doesn't make sense when you really start to look at it from a deeper level. So we're really trying to break down the problems that we see arise through the resolutions and find ways to implement them that follow the IRM report.
And you mentioned in our chat before we started recording this interview that the Oregon Health and Sciences program that you're entering is a result of of the provision and recommendation around educating nurses and the pathways to furthering your education. Will you describe that?
Yeah, so Oregon has what's called the Oregon Consortium of Nursing Educators. And basically, Oregon Health and Sciences University, through their interpretation of the IOM report, basically they took the curriculum from, I believe there's seven community colleges now, six or seven, and they have to submit their curriculum to OHSU, Oregon Health and Sciences, and submit it for approval. Then Oregon Health and Sciences goes through it all and says, okay, we like this, we think you maybe should put a little bit more emphasis on this. Once they're approved, every student that graduates from the ADN program then is guaranteed a spot at Oregon Health and Sciences University to continue. So most of the students are graduating from their community college with an ADN, and then they're going and getting a job, and then they're able to take the continuing education courses online while they're able to work. So they don't have to leave their communities, they don't have to pull up their families, they don't have to go, you know, migrate to Portland and kind of overload the clinical care setting, because one of the big problems that I found in nursing school is being able to find those clinical placements in situations where you want to actually work, where you want to get the experience. So with the OCNE program, we're able to stay in our hometown and stay working where we want to work, in the communities that we want to work in, doing the things we want to do, while still getting that education, while still being involved in leadership, while learning more of the epidemic, more of the big picture things than we're taught at the community college level, which is mostly, you know, preparing you to work in the hospital, unfortunately. So when we're able to do what we're trying to do while getting the education to work in the community, getting the education to have a broader perspective, I think it's a win-win. And hopefully we've had the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation come out and look at it and find that it's actually a pretty good model. So hopefully it'll be carrying around the country.
You come to nursing after another profession. What excited you about nursing to enter it as a field, and now clearly you've risen to be a leader in the student movement? What is it about nursing that you were attracted to?
So the thing that I have been the most attracted to about nursing is the ability to actually make a long-lasting difference in people's lives. So if you're able to start, especially when you're able, if you're able to meet people when they're young, have an influence on people when they're young, that student could then, or that, I keep saying that student, that child could then affect, you know, 10, 20, 30 other people. So if you teach a child healthy lifestyle, good ways that they're going to be able to progress as a person, then not only are you helping that one child, you're most likely helping that family, you can also then have influencing, you know, 10, 20, 30 other people. And especially when you're able to work with that family as a whole rather than just the student, Head Start's been really great about that, giving us the opportunity to educate both the parents and the children. So not only are they, the students taught some really great things that taste good that they're able to eat, but at the same time the parents learn, you know, this is an easy way to make these recipes or to cook these foods, because that's one of the biggest concerns that people have is the cost of food, because it's very cheap to go get a cheeseburger at McDonald's, but it's not the healthiest. I think everybody knows that. But being able to show that you can actually cook healthy food with not a lot of money is something that's been, I think, been forgotten with a lot of parents today. It's just not something that has always been taught in school. So I think as nurses, that's a great place that we can fill in.
Yeah, and I think the simple foods, whether one can afford organic or mm-hmm. one can afford locally grown, which hopefully that's moving in a direction of more affordability, it's engaging the entire family and not leaving it only up to one of the parents or often the mom, when there are families and many households where parents are holding more than one job in order to afford to cover their expenses. And when you engage children early on, as you're suggesting, they can help clean the carrots, they can help chop the mm-hmm. vegetables, and they also can clean up so mm-hmm. that it's the whole family involved. And certainly in many traditional families, even in the United States, our immigrant populations, that's been true. And moving that back, sort of a movement back, and having nursing lead that effort or be part of that effort nationally and globally is a wonderful use of our time, isn't it, Jesse?
Yeah, and one thing that I've noticed from my experience is that, and I think this has also been evidenced by some of the research, is that women are able to find jobs more easily right now than men. So the man who has normally been, I don't know, working in a factory or doing construction like I used to do, suddenly he's the one at home, and he doesn't know anything about cooking. He doesn't know, you know, how to prepare food. He knows how to make macaroni and cheese, and that's what he's going to make while the mom is able to find work. So just being able to show families, you know, this is an easy recipe. It's easy to come up with a complete protein on it cheaply. You know, it's not hard to do. People have been doing it for hundreds of years. I mean, we survived before fast food and, you know, Rice-A-Roni and everything else that's already pre-made. I mean, we can start very cheaply with, you know, rice and beans. And it's not very difficult, and it doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes knowing what to do, preparation, knowing what to buy,
and orienting ourselves in that
right.
direction. Here at the Congress, where I'm talking with Jesse Kennedy. He's the president of the National Student Nurse Association in the United States. He's graduating from Lane Community College in June with his associate degree and heading on to Oregon Health and Sciences University at Eugene, Oregon. In Portland, Oregon.
Right, yes.
And I was very moved by the session, the Student Congress session yesterday, with the discussion of rural health and access to care as being a primary theme throughout the Congress. And one of the comments, not just by one of the students in the audience, had to do with a desire to do more placement in rural communities and some pushback and resistance by faculty that the supervision of clinical placements in rural communities is difficult. And why don't you speak to what that discussion ensued, how that discussion continued, and some of the outcomes of that discussion?
Right. So a lot of the students are seeing pushback because there's not enough faculty to supervise the students. But one of the really very poignant examples that came up is, what is your scope of practice in that situation? If you are wanting to work in the rural communities, you're not necessarily going to be needing to have OR experience. You're not going to need to have surgical recovery experience. You are at the level where you're doing mostly education, and you're doing small interventions, and then if more intervention is needed, you're passing them on to the hospital. I mean, that's not your job to do all of that care in the rural level. I mean, I have one of my friends is going to OHSU right now, and she's about to graduate, and she went directly into the public health. She doesn't want to work in the hospital at all. She went directly into doing all of her clinicals in the community care setting. And she had a nurse come up to her that was just upset with her, and she said, "Why are you doing this? You have to work in the hospital for a number of years before you can go in community care. I mean, what are you going to do if somebody has a heart attack in front of you?" And my friend just looked at her. She said, "Well, I'll start compressions and call 911. The same thing you would do in the hospital. You'd start compressions and call a code blue. I mean, it's not this big undertaking that everybody makes it up to be. I mean, your scope of practice is different. And when the scope of practice changes, I think the education and the liability and all of the concerns that faculty has also has to change, because you're doing an entirely different job. I mean, it's just as necessary, but it's just a different setting, an entirely different job.
There are community health networks throughout the country now that are doing a nurse residency for new graduates who want to go directly into the community, and I think it is a future that we'll be seeing more and more of. Certainly the Affordable Care Act and healthcare reform is turning that pyramid upside down and saying that we need to start in the home, we need to start in the community, and this is a perfect place for the transition of our new graduates and our nurses coming out and saying, this is where I want to work. So sometimes academia is a little bit slower to respond to changes in policy. What are some of the strategies that you, I know you've only been in your office for a month, but tell me some of your ideas going forward.
Well, I think the biggest thing that is going to be the motivation for change is money. I mean, no matter where you go, all the hospitals are trying to cut money. The biggest motivator in politics is always money too. So we need to be able to show that we can save money through prevention. And we can show that by keeping people out of the hospital, not only are you saving the taxpayer money, not only are you saving the person money, you're also saving the hospital money, because most of the time when somebody comes into the hospital uninsured, the hospital has to eat that cost. But then they're going to raise the price and everything else, and then we end up paying for that cost indirectly. So being able to show that by getting out into the communities as students, by getting out in the community as nurses, and meeting those needs when they arise, rather than waiting for them to be inevitable, is going to be, I think, the best way that we can actually show that it's cost effective. I mean, we've been doing a lot of vaccine clinics. And when you do a vaccine clinic, you can track the amount of vaccines that are given, the amount of people that come in, and you can show the cost. And the cost is almost always very minimal. I mean, we worked with the Oregon Adult Immunization Coalition, and they gave us a lot of vaccines that were donated to them by the pharmaceutical companies. And they have a limited amount of time that they can give them before they expire, and they just need people to do it. And I'm sure it's a similar situation around the country, that there are vaccines that are going to expire. Why aren't we using those and tracking that this cost was saved? These people are not going to come in with pertussis anymore. They're not going to need to come in and spend months in the hospital when they get tetanus. I mean, there's so many things we can avoid. They're not going to come in and get with pneumonia because they've been laying in bed for 2 months and they've not gone to work, and the whole household is this huge cost to their family, when we can cut it off at the start, really.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me in Melbourne, Australia. We're in the media room at the International Congress of Nursing. It's inspiring, Jesse. Mr. Jesse Kennedy is the president of the National Student Nurses Association. He's here at ICN, one of the few National Student Nurses Association, but I can see you work in the crowd, Jesse, and making sure that it's not one of the few.
Yes.
The power of student nurses needs to continue to be tapped, and I'm pleased to have had this opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
I'm Barbara Glickstein. You've been tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. You can find out more about us at our site at centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.